welcome to the latest Science of Sport podcast. I'm your host, Mark Solomon, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Simon Hartley. So Simon is a sports psychology consultant, and he's worked with a load of different teams, including Team GB, Fiji Rugby Sevens, and Bayer Leverkusen. His work predominantly focuses on motivation, so today it's great to welcome him onto the show to be able to discuss how you can motivate yourself and your athletes to achieve optimal performance. So without further ado, it's time to welcome Simon onto the show. So Simon, welcome to the Science of Sport podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So can you give us a quick introduction as to who you are and what you've been up to until now?
Sure, yeah. So my background is sports psychology, which I've been doing for almost 30 years now. It was a very, very young discipline when I first sort of emerged into the world of applied sports psychology. There weren't many of us in the UK, weren't many in the world actually at that time. And for the first probably 10 years or so, I worked exclusively in sport. But since then, I've branched out and I apply what I used to think of as sports psychology, which I've since learned is actually human psychology, apply that to all sorts of disciplines. So in business, charities, healthcare, education, the military, all sorts of areas.
Absolutely excellent. And we're here today to discuss motivation. So can you, before we get into all of the good bits of how to be super motivated and all that kind of stuff, can you give us a definition of what motivation is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I take things down to their simplest common denominator usually. So to me, I relate to a definition I saw when I was a student. It's the why of behaviour. It's the reasons why we do things, we don't do things. We do the things we maybe shouldn't do. We don't do the things we should do. You know, it's all of the reasoning that sits behind that, really, which describes motivation. But beyond definitions, I always think it's useful to know what it looks like, what it feels like, what it sounds like when you're hearing it from others. So actually, one of the things that I do when I'm talking about motivation with practitioners often is to ask them to reflect on what does it look like when your athletes are motivated or not? How do you know the difference when it's right in front of you? How do you know the person that's really motivated and the person that probably isn't quite today? How do you see those fluctuations over time? Because it's interesting that when you get to know people, the signs of motivation that you see aren't the same in everyone. You know, the classic chest beating, shouting, fist waving, that doesn't usually accurately describe motivation for most people. I've seen lots of people do the fist waving and the shouting and the chest beating, but actually they didn't actually show signs of motivation when we got down to the brass tacks and started to understand what it really looked like. And also what it looks like when it shows up in us, because that can be different too. And so that's where I think the real useful information is about motivation, and it's not necessarily something you can wrap up in a definition.
I think it's a really interesting insight. And then when we look a little bit more into detail in there, what different types of motivation are there? What are the options available to us? So obviously you can rock up on Monday morning and be like, oh, I'm hugely motivated because I'm going to get paid loads of money or whatever. But that's very different to I'm not getting paid and I'm still going to give my best. So what are the types of motivation which are available to either athletes or coaches?
So when I've looked at what motivates people, what motivates us as human beings, I start with some very simple questions. So one of the questions that I have asked thousands of times now in all sorts of organizations. So I've asked this to elite athletes. I've also asked it to people involved in high level sport, you know, on the fringes and support folk. I've asked it in businesses. I've asked it to the lowest paid workers, as well as the CEOs. So minimum wage workers, people that, you know, clean the place or make coffees or whatever they do. I've asked the same question, which is not why do you come to work? Because we'll probably get stuck on the headline answer if we ask that question, which is, duh, I need to get paid. But why do you come here and do this stuff with us? Why do you do this job here? And when I ask that question, there are a myriad of answers that come out. If you think around some answers, I'm going to throw this one back to you now. Think around some of the answers that you would get. What do you think typically?
Things like if I'm an S&C coach, I'm a masochist. No, I think if I look at some realistic answers, I think things like helping people, donating time and effort to your community, or getting a sense of satisfaction out of your job, or things around helping other people and making them feel good.
Yeah, absolutely, and so there are lots of answers that, and it. In some areas of life, you hear these sort of more often. So I want to make a difference. I know that what I do can really impact people's lives. In some cases, what I do might save lives. I did some work a while ago with the RNLI in the UK, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute. And they understand that there's a real purpose to what they do, an important purpose to what they do. So some of the answers that you will hear revolve around the difference that we make, the impact that we have, and the fact that what we do could have a positive impact on, either on people's lives, on society, on the planet, whatever it is. And so for some people, purpose is an absolute driver. But that's not the only driver. And yeah, I don't know, have you come across Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why? Have you?
I haven't read it or listened to it, but I do know that it exists, and I think I've seen one or two of his other ones as well, but not personally read that one.
And it's sort of based around the premise that if we want to motivate people, there has to be a powerful reason, a powerful purpose behind it, and probably quite a grand purpose, if you know what I mean, beyond us. And that's absolutely fine. I'm not disagreeing with that, but if we see it like that, I think that's kind of one-dimensional. I have met lots of people, and I've spoken to business leaders who have got factories that make widgets, just, you know, stuff. I spoke to a guy once that their factory made little washers that go in plumbing. And he said, I've got a lot of people here who don't give a stuff about the grand purpose. We could come up with some wonderful statement about why we make washers and the difference it makes to the planet and whatever. They still wouldn't give a stuff. They're here to get fed, pick up a wage, go home. You know, that's it, really. And so that understanding tells us there has to be more to it than purpose. Some people will absolutely relate to purpose, but some people won't. So then when we start asking people, why do you come here and do this stuff with us? A lot of people will talk about enjoyment. Sometimes it's they enjoy what they do. They might enjoy the task. Sometimes not, because the task might not be that much fun. I mean, people that clean the sewers probably wouldn't say that their task was fun, particularly. But there might be elements of enjoyment somewhere. A lot of people will say, this is a great team. I love the people here. I love working as part of this team. The culture's brilliant. The environment's great. You know, all of that sort of stuff. Sometimes I like the people that we work with. I like the fact that, you know, if I'm a sociable person, my work revolves around having conversations with people, all that sort of stuff. It could be that they like the creativity. It could be that they like the challenge within the job. And actually, if it was easy, it would be boring. I've met loads of engineers over the years who love the fact that their job is not easy, and that it's always kind of mentally stimulating and pushing them. So for a lot of people, that's part of their answer, that enjoyment is a really key factor. For others, it's around kind of ambition and achievement. It's around the fact that they can just hit and set goals and they can get a real sense of satisfaction and achievement from what they do. Now, for athletes, I've met an awful lot of athletes that have maybe lost the love of what they do, but they haven't lost the love of winning or challenge or the sort of the goal, the prize at the end of it, even to the extent that, you know, when they're in the gym and you say, right, what's your PB? Let's go beat it. They just want to beat it just because it's there. You know?
Yeah.
So some people are absolutely driven by that. They're driven by improvement and progress and that sense of satisfaction, achievement. It also links into when I've spoken to people about being part of an organization that's genuinely recognized as the best in the world. They get a real sense of buzz about being the best in the world, being part of that organization. You know, why do kids that grow up in New Zealand all want to play for the All Blacks? Well, they're the best, right? Why do soldiers in the British Army all want to be part of the Paras or the SAS? they're the best. And so that's also part of that motivation that, that in us that strives to be always achieving and driven by ambition. So that's another motivator. The other answer that I hear quite a lot is, well, reward, pay, money, euros, you know, all of those sorts of things. And sometimes it's literally the fact that this job pays well, or this job pays better than any other job. Sometimes, though, it's that it's there's a sense of reward with it. So it can be recognition as well. It could be awards. It can be all sorts of things that are wrapped up into that. It doesn't have to literally be this is the best paid job on the planet. So when I step back and look at all of the answers that I've ever heard, all of them fall into these four categories: purpose, enjoyment, ambition and achievement, recognition and reward. And that's why I often describe that to me, motivation is pear-shaped, and that these are the four drivers, really. I haven't heard any answer that doesn't fit into that, apart from sadomasochism. I do it because it's painful and I just love pain. Well, that actually fits into enjoyment, if we think about it. Daft.
Potentially. Can you explain the pear-shaped analogy for us? So obviously, that's a pear shape, but what does that mean to you?
So it means that actually we've got a framework to understand our own motivation and other people's, because we could use it as a way of almost profiling what motivates people. Are they primarily purpose driven? Are they enjoyment driven? Are they ambition and achievement driven? Are they reward driven? And if we can get a handle on individuals and what primarily motivates them, because the truth is, it's a bit like personality profiling. We're all motivated by all of those, but to different extents. So you might be more ambition orientated. I might be more enjoyment orientated. We're still all, you know, all four of those drivers work within us, but we've got one that's a primary and a dominant one, one that's probably secondary and a tertiary and a weaker one. And therefore, if we understand the individuals that we're working with, we can start to plug into those. And rather than, you know, one of the mistakes leaders make often is they assume that everybody's motivated the same way that they are. So if they're massively ambition orientated, they assume that everybody else would be as well. If they're just driven to be the best, they'll assume that everybody else would be orientated that way. And so that's almost like the drum that they bang, and they get really frustrated when not everybody else is in rhythm with that drum. We might have some people who are purpose orientated and actually ambition, it's important, but not as important. So we can lose most people if we're not careful. If we understand how each individual is orientated, now we can plug into that and we can start to use that to sort of everybody's self-motivated, but as leaders and practitioners, we can plug into that and start to find something that they relate to.
So I'm interrupting Simon very rudely and very quickly to make sure that you're aware of the Science Sport Coach Academy. Now, Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. That means you can fit them in and around your busy coaching schedule. So if you're enjoying today's podcast and you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, when we're finished, hit the link in the show notes so you can get into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days. So remember to hit that link when we're finished. And back to Simon.
I think there's some really interesting insights and some really interesting advice as well. When it comes to athletes, obviously you have some athletes you're like, okay, that person is just in the training ground every day doing more and extra, and they're super motivated. So what do you think then separates, let's say, the top elite end of athletes with sub-elite athletes when it comes to motivation? Are they just more motivated, or are there other things at play there?
It's probably that whatever it is that's driving them is present on a regular basis. And it could be that person's out there and they're the first on poolside or first at the track or whatever, because they've got a real passion for what they do, or they really enjoy it. And actually, when they go home, they sort of feel a little bit flat, because training ground's the place to be. That's where I get my buzz. I want to push myself. And if it's not a training session, I'll go and do one anyway. And again, if we dig under that, that might be because they they really enjoy it. It might be because that's their social life. That's their sense of belonging. That's their family. And they want to be around those people. So actually, they're up at the crack of dawn, they're having their breakfast, and they're already thinking about being in training and, you know, looking forward to it. For others, if you can kind of dig into what it is that gets them out of bed and brings them there, then you start to understand the real motivation behind it. And on a lot of occasions, we create an environment, and those for whom it suits are those that show up early, put the effort in, because we've created an environment that just matches them. And it's not necessarily that they are intrinsically more motivated. It's just that we've created the conditions that bring that out. And for others, we maybe haven't. Now, I look at schools. And so I've got two daughters, one of whom is very, very academic. She loves being in the classroom, laps everything up. And one who hates it with a passion. And can't wait to finish school and get out of this waste of time environment. And I'm looking at the pair of them thinking, it's not that one of them is more motivated than the other. It's that school naturally kind of aligns with the motivation of my eldest daughter and absolutely is the polar opposite for the other one. So when we kind of look at that, we have an opportunity to create an environment that actually suits more people. And when I talk to organizations about understanding pear-shaped motivation, one element of that is to understand the individuals and start to sort of tap into their motivation more readily. The other one is to create an environment that actually suits everybody. And I describe it as we build four strong pillars of motivation.
And so can you walk us through that? Because this sounds great, right? But I want to go into my coaching session later today, and I'm like, right, okay, well, let's create an environment for everyone. But that's not very easy, right? If I look at the, I don't know, I have, 15 people in a room later, and I know for a fact that some of them are driven by the numbers that we're going to produce, and some of them are just want to get in and get out, and some of them are doing it for the social side, and some of them really can't be bothered. So how do we do that for everyone? That's tricky.
Absolutely. Well, this is not a magic wand, because fundamentally, if people don't really want to be there, it's the wrong place for them. We're not going to solve that problem. But we could ask, well, for those who are really purpose driven, what have we got here? What have we got in this environment that talks to them about why we do what we do? Because sport, on one level, is absolutely absurd. You know, I've worked in cricket, football, rugby. And I said I've worked with cricketers and said, why on earth do you do this? I mean, you walk out into the middle there with a piece of wood and you hit a little round red thing and you catch it and you throw it and you hit another round red thing. What? It's ridiculous. Rugby players, you're running around with a bag of air and you put it over a white line. It's absurd. What are we doing? You're kicking a bag of air around a field. What? And even with swimmers, you know, I said to a guy once, why do you get up at stupid 8:00 in the morning every day, come to the pool, you charge up and down in the chlorinated water for 2 hours, then you go and lift some weights, and then you go to physio and you do some stretching, and you come back and see me, and you go back to the pool again in the afternoon and back in the chlorinated water. I said, your hair's a mess, you stink. What's it all for? Because quite frankly, it's ridiculous. So what if you swim quicker than someone else? Big deal. Neither of you are drowning. So why does it matter that you swim quicker than they do? And the reason I ask that question is to get them to go, why do I do it?
How many people have quit sport under your tutelage?
there's
pointless.
There's a huge junk pile of athletes who've all quit sport because they end up
bringing Simon to get rid of the dead rudd.
Completely pointless. Yeah.
Sorry, but carry on. Sorry. But you asked the question.
Yeah, the reason is actually, if we don't understand that, we go through the motions. And we're so focused on what we do, we don't consider why we do it. And motivation comes from the why, understanding the why. Now, for some people, the answer is because of the prize at the end of it. Okay, great. So why is the prize important? Why does winning a gold medal matter? And so the athlete I was talking to, who's the swimmer, we're actually standing in a throwing cage having this discussion in an indoor training area. And he said, it's to win the gold medal. I said, is it? He said, yeah. I said, brilliant. I'm going to nip down to the trophy shop and buy you a gold medal. There you go. All done. Finished. You can go home now. I can go home. He said, no, that's not it, is it? Then he said something that, and this is many, many years ago, almost 20 years ago, and I remember it because it was so profound. He said, the medal is just a metal disc on a ribbon. I said, that's exactly what it is. And so why does it make a difference if it's a gold colour, silver colour or a bronze colour? Or maybe I could give you a green one or a blue one. You know, how would that be? And he said, the gold medal means I'm the best. No, actually, that's not important. He said, the whole point here is that I'm trying to achieve my potential. He said, if I win and it's because I'm racing 8-year-olds today, it means nothing. If I give it everything I've got and I get beaten by the world champion, I get beaten. And we came to the really simple understanding. Winning and losing isn't complicated. If you swim quicker than everyone else today, you'll win. If somebody else swims quicker, they're going to win. That's it. Your job isn't to beat them. Your job is to swim the fastest you can. And actually, the reason to swim the fastest you can is because you want to explore your potential. And whether somebody else swims quicker or not, it doesn't really affect whether you're exploring your potential. Actually, he said, what I want at the end of the career, yeah, I'd love some gold medals, but what I really want is to look back and say, no regrets. I gave that everything. And nowadays, his last Olympic race was the Beijing final in 2008. His last competitive race was the Beijing Olympic final. He's now got a career. He does some speaking mentoring. He's got a swim school business. He's got all sorts of stuff. He's doing exactly the same now outside of the pool. He's still exploring his potential. All he's done is swapped one vehicle for another. He used to do it through sport. Now he does it through business. So now I understand what it's all about and why we're getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going to the pool and stinking of chlorine at the end of the day. Rather than just doing it because it's there or because we've got used to it or because we don't know anything else to do. Flip side of that coin, when I had a similar discussion with another athlete, also a swimmer, she said, swimming's all I know. I feel trapped here is the truth. I can't quit or don't think I can quit because my entire social circle is built around swimming. When I'm not at school or at college, I'm here. My weekends are dominated by this. The only goals I've ever had are around this. The only recognition I've ever had is around this. My whole identity is built around this. But I hate it. So I feel trapped. And the reason that I started that conversation with her, the symptom was, she never really gives her all. And the coach said, I'm sure she's got more to give, but we're only seeing 70-75%, and she won't give us the rest. And then actually when you dig into it and you start looking at why somebody would open up the throttle, why they would give it everything, actually she didn't have a good answer for that. Because fundamentally she didn't want to be there. So yeah.
How do you then deal with that situation, right? So you've worked that out. Mm-hmm. You know that the athlete knows that the coach might not know that. How do you then go about dealing with that? Do you try and change it, or do you discuss it with the athlete, the coach? Do you say how do we motivate you further? Then do you just need to go and do something outside of swimming, or do you need to stop entirely? How do you deal with that situation? Because that's tricky.
Yeah, my one of the lessons that I've learned through life is that sometimes we forget that we have choice, but we always do have choice. So she'd forgotten that she had the choice to either really commit to it or leave. So she was stuck in the no man's land. So we had quite a few discussions about, so what do you want to do? Do you want to really commit to this, or do you want to leave and go and find something else to do? Because at the moment, the no man's land is not serving you or anyone else. Now, with athletes, my sort of go-to, because it's wrapped around confidentiality, is to ask them, do you want to chat to the coach about it? Do you think it would be helpful to chat to the coach about it? I'm not going to go and tell the coach. That's, you know, that would be breaking confidentiality. And quite frankly, that's not my job. That's your responsibility. So do you want to tell the coach? Do you want to talk to your parents? Do you want to, you know, bring in anybody else? Do you want to have some time? Do you want to think about it? Do you want to chat to me again in a week's time or a couple of weeks once you've had a chance to think about it? Where do you want to go with this? You know, put the athlete back in control, because they probably haven't been holding on to the steering wheel, if you know what I mean. They haven't been taking control and giving it any direction. They've just been in the flow. It's been taking them rather than them deciding. So to put them back in the driver's seat, put the hands back on the wheel and say, make some positive, active choices here, either to really commit or to say, this isn't for me anymore.
And it's just really interesting how you can then start to empower people to take control of their situation as opposed to allowing their situation to happen to them. When people are then, let's say motivation is low, right? So you've got someone in front of you who is like, yeah, I'm not really motivated to get the most out of my training today, or maybe in the acute phase of a few days a week. How do people then get out of that rut? So like, let's assume that you've got an athlete who's generally highly motivated, but today coming in, it's not happening. Like, how do you then get that person to really go to 100?
So part of understanding our why is not just the big why, the global why, but also the why for this session. And again, one of the reasons I see lots of people, not just in sport, but in life in general, going through the motions is because it's just another session. It's just another day. I've got a things to do list and I just tick my way down the things to do list without realizing why each part of that is important. So a lot of my work when I'm working around motivation with people is to start focusing on why today's session really matters. And how today's session actually is a golden opportunity if we use it, and a massive missed opportunity if we don't. Because, I mean, you know, life in Olympic sport, and it's the same in professional sport to a certain extent, but depending on where you are in that 4-year cycle, the Olympics or whatever it is can look a long way away. And you can think, oh, how will today's session make any difference? The truth is that, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, the really great athletes aren't massively more talented often, but they will squeeze more out of every session than the guys around them. And of course, that adds up over time. It might be a tiny, tiny amount more that they get out of today's session than the guys next to them, but tomorrow they'll get a tiny amount more as well, and a tiny amount more the day after. And you may not see the difference over the course of a week or even a month, but 6 months, a year, now you start to see the gap open up. And the daft thing is, having worked in environments where we've got, you know, squads of swimmers or track and field athletes or whatever, all training together, that the guys who don't make it don't realise why. They're thinking, but I've done the same training. You know, we both turned up at the gym at the same time and we had the same training card and we lifted the same weights and then we went and ran around the same distance on the track and all the rest of it. They don't realise that the person who did make it was more focused, gave more, attended to the details every single session, and they've done that for years. That's why they're now point something of a second quicker.
Yeah, and that's a small amount.
Through the javelin 2 centimetres further.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to see how that kind of adds up over time. And when you do look at the longer picture, then obviously we just mentioned the acute stuff, but when you look at the longer term, how do you then ensure that motivation stays? Because it sounds great, right? Like rock up, you come in, you're going to give that 1% extra, but acutely you might be able to do that really easily, a week, 2 weeks, a month. But how do you do that for a 10-year period or an entire career?
I think you've always got to tap back into it and focus on the step that you're on at the moment. So this is where some sports, I think, lend themselves to this more easily than others. So having worked in swimming for a lot of years, there are some simple things that we need to do. And if we're not careful, it just becomes kind of this boring mass. And swimmers will often talk about staring at the black line on the bottom of the pool endlessly for hours on end. But if we start to break it down, what are we working on right now? We need to sharpen your turns up. What particularly do we need to do to sharpen your turns up? I need to get the approach into the wall right. Okay, so let's really work today on getting that approach into the wall right. The fortunate thing about a pool is it's got two ends and we're not swimming around in circles, so you're going to hit the wall quite a few times during this session. We've got a lot of opportunities to really work on that approach into the wall. So that's what we're working on today. Let's get that right. Let's start monitoring where we were, where we want to be. Are we getting quicker? Are we getting more consistent? Let's get the videos on it. Let's have a look and put some real focus on that so that we spotlight that. Now, we might work on that for weeks and then we'll say, okay, how good is it now? That's sort of in shape. Where do we need to focus on next? My race pace, particularly my first length. I need to get the rhythm right. Okay, let's shine the torch back on that then. Let's have a look at it. Let's really work that. We'll monitor your turns to make sure they're not slipping, but let's put the focus on that now. And therefore, everything's purposeful. So one of the phrases that I often use in elite sport environments is practice with purpose. Let's understand what we're trying to work on, where we were, where we want to be. Are we making progress? And if we haven't got that, we're in trouble, because then we're going to start slipping into going through the motions. And for a lot of athletes, sometimes the stuff that looks obvious to them, looks obvious to us, we assume that they know it as well. And so we don't explain it. I was out in Oregon a couple of weeks ago with the Fiji Rugby Sevens team. There are some simple things that we need to do around recovery, but they weren't doing them. They weren't really engaging in ice bathing. And it's not complex stuff, because in a tournament, all we've got is the bare basics in terms of equipment and everything else. So yes, they can jump into some wheelie bins full of very, very cold water. We need to get the recovery strategies right, nutritionally, hydration, all of that sort of stuff. But they weren't really properly engaging in it. And we spent time deliberately not just explaining to them why, but showing them the difference between doing it properly and not. So here's what happens when we do it properly. Here's what happens if we don't. And they started to really understand it and feel it. So even though they hate jumping in an ice bath, I mean, Fijians tend to operate in 30 degree temperatures, and we're going to shove them in an ice bath, which is definitely not 30 degree. So they absolutely hate it. But now they understand, properly understand why it's important. Now they engage in doing it. So all we've done is we've drawn the dots or joined the dots between the what and the why.
And that's a massive piece of practical advice as well. So it's easy to say, oh, do your, I don't know, fill in your wellness, fill in your session load. But if they don't actually understand why they do it and how that improves their performance, maybe that 1% every day for a 10-year career, then I can imagine from an athlete's perspective, at least, they're like, oh, can't be bothered, or today it doesn't work.
Many years ago, and the sort of the first time I really properly learned this, and I'm sort of talking about the difference between knowing it theoretically and really genuinely doing it, I was working in professional football. And I'd had my first season in Premier League football, and I noticed that some of the time the lads were engaged, some of the time they weren't. When I was drinking a beer in the off season, you know, sitting in the sun drinking my beer, I was reflecting on why did they engage some sessions and not others? And then it struck me that they understood why we were doing some sessions, and I'd assumed they'd understood all of them, but they probably hadn't. I understood it, so I thought it was obvious, but they probably didn't really understand it. So I committed at the start of the following season to what I call my magic 1 minute. My magic 1 minute was 1 minute not just explaining what the session was, but why we were doing it. So the following year, it was actually with a different club. Following year, we started a session, and I said to the guys, last season, the last 5 minutes of our game cost us X number of goals, which we conceded in the last 5 minutes. And therefore, instead of winning a game, we drew it, or instead of drawing it, we lost it. This is what it meant in terms of points on the league table. This is what it meant in terms of positions on the league table. So instead of finishing there on the league table, you finish down there. And that's just because of the last 5 minutes. And it's all about focus. So today's session is to help us focus and make sure that we're good in the last 5 minutes of the game. Does everybody think that's worth doing? Lots of nodding. Yeah, absolutely. So you're going to give it everything, yeah? Brilliant. Off we go then. Now, the previous season, I noticed that I was having to inject a lot of energy to make sure that we kept the standards and the energy and everything else. So I was kicking ass, basically, kicking the boys in the backside to say, come on, work harder, do more, focus more. When I got the magic 1 minute in place, I did none. The players did it with each other. So there was one lad during this session that we talked about focusing on the last 5 minutes of the game. One lad who was messing about. The other players turned around and said, oi, excuse me. Not quite as polite as that. Do you mind? We don't want to lose goals in the last 5 minutes. Would you please get your arse in gear? And I wasn't doing any of the butt kicking anymore. And so I committed at the start of every session, magic 1 minute. That's all I'm doing. Then we'll go and run the session. But they need to know why. And even if it is obvious, I'm going to say it anyway. Just in case there's somebody who's maybe not had their coffee this morning or whatever, and doesn't quite get it.
I think that's some excellent advice. Before we wrap up, because I'm conscious that we've had a really good but albeit longer than planned conversation, I don't want to steal your entire day. Well, I'd love to. When you bring all of that together, right, you've got your four pillars. Can you give us some examples of how athletes can then tap into those four pillars to make sure they are motivated using each one of those?
Yeah, so it's about making sure they're present within our environment, so that whatever does motivate us, we can link into it. So an understanding that what we do is important, that there's a reason why we carry a little bag of air and put it over a white line. So last night I delivered a session with the at Headingley Stadium. It was a fundraiser for the Leeds Rhinos Foundation. They talk a lot at Leeds Rhinos about making a difference through the power of sport, changing people's lives through sport. So, yeah, putting a bag over a white line, great. We might even pick up trophies, fantastic. Why do we bother doing it? Because when we do it well, there's an opportunity to change lives and really impact our communities. So they've got their purpose. We've also got to make sure it's an enjoyable place to be. We've got a great team, which usually means making sure we've got great team players, not a bunch of a-holes. And we've got good leadership within that team, and that we understand that as well as doing something well, we also need to have fun doing it. So standards are important, but we also need to have a laugh. I mean, it's one of those things I learned by spending time with Fijian Sevens players. If they're not laughing and having fun, they are not going to perform. And it's not just true of Fijian Sevens players. We need to enjoy what we do. It can be serious fun, if you know what I mean. Serious and fun in combination. That we need to, if we want to, a sense of achievement, it's not just hitting the goal, it's recognizing our progress. A lot of people hit goal after goal after goal and don't really appreciate the fact that they're making any progress. You know, they hit the goal, they forget about it, and then move on to the next one. They don't really feel any sense of achievement from it. So celebrating success is important as part of that. And the recognition and reward doesn't have to be pounds, shillings and pence or whatever. It can be all sorts of daft little things. With the Fiji rugby guys, we set them off with a challenge, and really it meant they had to pull out all the stops for 2 days and really push themselves. And the prize at the end of it, so we put them into teams, the prize for the winning team was pizzas and beer. And they pulled out all the stops for pizzas and beer. In their world, that's a big prize. So it doesn't have to be anything massive, but even just the making sure we really recognize when people are pulling out the stops, when we see good stuff, and it doesn't have to be a massive public show. It can just be an arm around somebody's shoulder or a little fist bump and say, that was a great session. You know, I noticed that you went deep there. I noticed you could have given up and you chose not to. Fair play to you. You know, even stuff like that builds recognition and reward into the environment. So it's about, it's simple stuff. It doesn't have to be overly complex, but it's making sure consistently it's all there.
Absolutely excellent. So Simon, massive thanks for your time, effort and wisdom today. I really appreciate it. So where can people find a little bit more about you and what you're up to?
So come find me on LinkedIn. I'd be delighted to connect with anybody on LinkedIn. I am World Class Simon on X, I think it's called now, not Twitter. So come find me on there. We've got a YouTube channel as well, at Simon Hartley YouTube channel. Yeah, drop me a line, connect. I'd be delighted to pick up a conversation.
Fantastic. Simon, massive thanks. It's been a pleasure and I look forward to speaking again soon.
Take care.
Cheers, buddy.
And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks to Simon for all of his hard work on today's podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you do at home too. Before you leave, I want to point you in the direction of the Science of Sport Coach Academy. Now, the Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So that means you can fit it in and around your busy coaching schedule. So if you enjoyed today's podcast and you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, you can get into the Coach Academy completely for free using the link in just a few seconds' time. So hit that link in the show notes when we're finished here. And of course, if you have enjoyed today's podcast, it'd be fantastic if you could recommend us to a coach, a colleague, an athlete, or a friend. That means that we can keep bringing the best possible guests and the best possible content. And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks from me, I'm Matt Solomon for Science Support, and I'll speak to you next week.